knew what I was doing, that I got in and out quickly enough to keep Dot safe, but I'm clearly just an amateur who tried and failed to punch above her own weight. And now, instead of fulfilling my aim of protecting the finalists and exposing the truth about Europa, I've managed to endanger us all. There's no scenario where I can come forward with the biosignatures now, not when the data came from a robot that's since been scrubbed. My notes will look like nothing more than the ramblings of a lunatic. And with Dot cut from the mission and Dr. Takumi rushing the next stage of the draft, who even knows how much damage my actions caused? I screwed up. The words replay over and over in my mind, forming a rhythm, like the backing score to Dr. Takumi's terrifying words. I screwed up royally, and I'm not sure I'll ever be able to make it right. I glance at Leo, wondering if he hates me now, the way I'm beginning to hate myself. Should I confess? If I do, the wrong person will no longer be blamed, and maybe my data on the biosignatures could actually be taken seriously, if I'm willing to give up my freedom for it. But all too quickly, another image comes to mind. My family being forced to pay for my crime. The thought of any harm coming to them, of Sam's medical treatment being withheld, forces me to be selfish and keep my secret. Dr. Wagner has the resources to escape the ISTC and the government's reach. We don't. And there's something else. By confessing, I'm removing the one finalist who knows the truth, whose understanding of extraterrestrials and microbiology could help keep the final six alive on Europa. Me. I need to go with them. As soon as we're excused, Leo and I break out of our seats and make a beeline for the elevators. We jump in the second the doors open, and once we're alone, I bury my face against his chest, and then I feel his arms stiffen around me. "I thought for sure I wouldn't see you this morning," comes the sound of Beckett's voice as he slips into the elevator after us. I freeze. "Why in the world would you think that?" "Just a feeling I had," he says breezily. "You know, after last night." The elevator doors open onto the HAB floor, and I watch, my stomach churning, as he saunters off. "What is he talking about?" Leo asks. I cover my face with my palms. I can't believe I have more than one giant blunder to admit to. "He caught me trying to sneak into your room last night," I mutter, "and he might have seen something a whole lot more incriminating, too." But as Leo groans at this latest curveball, I realize something else. If Beckett did see Dot leave my room, he's obviously not covering for me out of the goodness of his heart. He plans on lording this over me, using the information to get something from me. The question is, what does he want? "Come on," I give Leo a gentle nudge as we reach the door to my room. "We have bigger things to worry about than whether we're caught together in here. We need to talk." "Okay, but we can't just talk in the middle of the room or someone walking by could overhear," he says. We step inside and Leo strides over to my closet. "This should be safer." Okay. I crawl into the closet with him and we fold our bodies into the dark space beneath my hanging uniforms. If the stakes weren't so high, it would almost be funny. But I sober quickly as I fill Leo in on Dot's data and the most monumental discoveries of all. The proof of life and the reality of the alien bacteria inside our bodies, working its way through our muscles, our consciousness, ourselves. Leo stares at me, his mouth open in shock. "You don't want to believe it," I acknowledge, "because the idea that we could be walking into this kind of danger threatens your view of the mission, of everything it's come to represent for you. I get it, but it's not that." He swallows hard. There's something I should tell you. Before I left Italy, the Prime Minister's daughter told me something she overheard, that I was chosen for the 24 because my underwater skills could make me some sort of weapon on Europa. My eyebrows shoot up. "Seriously? And you never shared that because..." Leo gives me a sheepish look. "I didn't take it seriously at first. Besides, all I've wanted this whole time is to make the final six. The last thing I was going to do is poke holes in the reason I'm a finalist. But when I saw that change come over Beckett in the diving pool after the RRB shots, and knowing how the serum affected me in the water too..." He takes a deep breath. "I'm starting to believe Dr. Takumi and the ISTC are grooming us to adapt to the extraterrestrials' world, so we can eventually overtake them and make Europa our world." I gape at him, speechless, as all the jarring pieces fall into place. "It makes sense," I whisper when I find my voice, "especially the secrecy. because who would sign off on this mission if they knew up front what we're up against? So instead, Dr. Takumi is giving us the tools through the RRB and our training. I shiver, a chill running through my body. In his mind, it's maybe even a part of terraforming, clearing out the underwater life and making Europa humans only. And we can't let that happen. No matter how frightening it may be to us, the life that came before is the life that belongs there. Leo nods, and I can see it in his eyes, the crushing realization of what the mission really entails. That's why I need to go, I continue. I have to be one of the final six. Leo's expression turns incredulous. What? After everything you said about needing to get back home, about how this mission is a likely recipe for death, are you saying the proof of alien life actually changed your mind? No, it just made me realize where I'm most needed. I take Leo's hand in mine. The other finalists are going into this blind. If I can use my scientific ability to keep cracking at the mystery of what kind of life is waiting for us up there and how we might survive alongside it, then the final six needs me. I failed Dot, but maybe I can make up for that now by trying to keep the rest of the six safe. Leo gazes at me with an expression that fills my cheeks with heat. Every time I'm sure I've figured you out, you show me another layer. Maybe that's another reason why I can't imagine going back to a life without you. He wraps his arms around me and I close my eyes, his touch my only comfort. It's all in Dr. Takumi's hands now, he murmurs. But I've got to do something. I have to make sure we go up there together.
25. Leo. Tonight is the space camp version of the Last Supper. Our last dinner before the final six are unveiled tomorrow. The mood in the cafeteria is how I imagine soldiers must feel on the eve of deployment. Only in this case, the war we're afraid of returning to is at home. If I thought the nerves and anticipation were extreme leading up to the first elimination, the tension in the air tonight could power an entire city. Especially mine. Not only do I need to make the final draft, I need to make it with her. The only way I can get through tomorrow is if not just one, but two prayers are answered. Naomi and I sit at a table with Sydney, Minka, Dev, and Henry, all of us too anxious to swallow a bite of food. I glance at Dr. Takumi on and off throughout the hour as I make my decision. And then, when he moves to the door at the end of dinner, I jump out of my seat, catching him just as he exits. Dr. Takumi, can I talk to you? I blurt out. It will only take a second. He arches an eyebrow. What is it, Leonardo? I just wanted to say that there are two people here who were born for this mission. I know I have the underwater skills to get us through the ice crust of Europa, and training on the same team as Naomi Ardalan has convinced me that she has the brains to keep us alive in space. I take a deep breath. This mission is what I've been living for ever since the day I was drafted. I know it's your decision, but I just wanted to promise you. Naomi and I are both the right choice. A long pause follows, and I wait, every muscle in my body tensing, while Dr. Takumi gives me an inscrutable look. I'll keep that in mind, he says finally. Good night, Leonardo. He turns away, leaving me wondering, hoping that my plea made the right impact. It's here. The morning of the announcement, the moment all of us have been simultaneously dreading and waiting for. My stomach's been turning somersaults all night from nerves, and as I glance in the mirror while getting ready, I notice the dark circles under my eyes, the sleep-deprived pallor of my skin. Lark had instructed us to show up camera-ready, but I'm barely thinking about the press and the public, who we'll be facing for the first time in weeks. All I can think about is the impending decision. The finalists reconvene at the top of the hab floor staircase, and as soon as Naomi spots me, she cuts through the others till she's by my side. I feel sick, she moans. I can't take this kind of nerves. I hold her gaze, aching to touch her, to comfort her with more than just words. I know, I feel the same, but it'll be over soon. And hopefully we'll be celebrating.
A hush comes over the finalists, and Naomi and I turn to see Dr. Takumi and General Sokolov striding toward us.
Good morning, Dr. Takumi greets us. Is everyone ready? Of course we're not, but we all nod and follow the two of them into the elevator, down to the official entrance that we haven't seen since arrival day, a lifetime ago. Stepping off the elevator, we can hear the same marching band from that first day, too. They're playing the Star Spangled Banner as Dr. Takumi pushes through the doors to the ISTC front steps, the rest of us following in his wake.
Naomi and I move slightly closer as we walk together into the roar of the crowd, the two of us blinking against the blaze of flashbulbs.
General Sokolov instructs us to line up on the steps, behind the makeshift podium and microphone set up for Dr. Takumi.
I stand between Naomi and Ana Martinez,
and as Dr. Takumi steps up to the microphone and the crowd quiets,
Naomi brushes her fingertips against mine.
In this moment, with tensions running so high, we're both forgetting our unspoken rule to never touch in public, never give ourselves away. Are you all ready to discover the names and faces of the final six? Dr. Takumi shouts out, pumping up a crowd that doesn't need any more energizing. Here we go.
Naomi turns to me.
I'm too afraid to watch, she whispers. Me too. Just look at me, I murmur back. It'll be okay. Your lieutenant commander is Dev Khanna from India. The crowd erupts while the band launches into the opening notes of the Indian national anthem. I smile to myself, happy for Dev. He's one of the good guys here. The mission medical officer is Sydney Pearl from Canada. Co-pilot is Jian Su of China.
I try to keep my eyes on Naomi,
to stay calm as the terror builds within me. It's down to the wire now. If we're not among these last three names... Our science officer is Minka Paladin from Ukraine. And the underwater specialist... I stand up straighter
as Naomi grips my hand tighter.
Is Beckett Wolf of the United States of America. No. No. My vision blurs. All the blood rushes to my head. This can't be happening. He didn't take my spot. He couldn't have.
It's okay. It'll be okay, I hear Naomi say, looking up at me desperately.
We'll go home together. We'll find another way to help the final six. You'll meet my family, and we can have the kind of life... She stops suddenly, as the unthinkable happens. Last but not least, our communications and technology specialist is Naomi Ardalan, also from the United States. I want to shout, to scream, but I can't make a sound.
Naomi's legs buckle beneath her,
and she grips my arm, my own horror reflected in her eyes. This can't be real. We can't be separated forever. She can't go to Europa while I stay behind with nothing left but her memory. It's like losing my family all over again. Just when my world seemed to be opening up, all hope is gone. Just like that.
26. Naomi. The world stops when I hear my name. The sounds around me distort, the scene freezes, and I can't hold myself up. A guard grabs me by the shoulders, tearing me away from Leo. Leo. I take one look at his devastated face and my heart crumbles. There's no way I can leave him. This is all one giant mistake. It has to be. The security guard pushes me up front with the other five, and I am forced to stand beside Beckett in front of the cameras. Beckett, who looks at me with a knowing smirk that makes my insides recoil. The band bursts into "You're a Grand Old Flag," and the crowd breaks into a chant, "Naomi! Beckett!" But it's all happening in slow motion, and I can't make any sense of the faces around me. They cheer right in the face of my agony. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Anytime I ever imagined being named one of the final six, I always pictured Leo beside me. And now, the thought of leaving this world and spending the rest of my life with the loathsome Beckett and four near strangers has me on the verge of hysteria. General Sokolov joins Dr. Takumi at the microphone, and the two begin waxing on about the journey ahead of us and all that's to come starting tomorrow. But I can't listen. All I can do is try not to cry, to avoid Leo's eyes. It was heartbreaking enough when the draft meant leaving my family. Now, to be leaving my first and only love on top of it, is a whole new level of pain. As the speeches draw to an end, the guards close in around us, ushering the final six, the faculty, and eliminated finalists out of the fray, back inside space camp. But instead of falling in line with the others, I break away and sprint to Dr. Takumi before he reaches the door, grabbing his arm with the force of my emotions. "Excuse me?" He peers down his nose at me, shaking his arm loose. "Why?" I burst out. "Why me? Why Beckett? And not Leo?" Dr. Takumi pauses, and then he gives me a cold smile. "You were an obvious choice. None of the others here can come close to your skill set and knowledge." The way he emphasizes the word makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. "After seeing what you are capable of, it was clear," he continues. "You are far more useful to us on Europa than on Earth." Dr. Takumi lowers his voice, and something fearsome flashes in his eyes. "You didn't really think you got away with everything, did you? The stunt you pulled in the robotics lab, what you did to Dot, of course I knew it was you. But it only proved you more indispensable to me and to the mission. After all, who else has shown themselves to be such a skilled tech specialist?" I can't speak as I stare up at him. His words have knocked the wind out of me. My mind struggles to comprehend the fact that he knows, that he was a step ahead of me this entire time, and now it's all the more clear why I was given a coveted spot on the final six instead of being thrown in a jail cell. Because I have something they need. I'm more beneficial to the mission as one of the guinea pigs sent to Europa than as an eliminated finalist running her mouth about what she discovered. Even from jail, my story could get out, but now Dr. Takumi knows I won't say a word. I can't. I owe him for not turning me into the government, and I have to play this perfectly if I'm going to keep the six of us safe. My voice shakes as I shift the subject away from me. "Why not Leo? He beat Beckett in every underwater challenge. It makes no sense." "We couldn't have both of you," Dr. Takumi interrupts with an impervious shrug. "On a mission as crucial as this, we can't afford to have any of our astronauts distracted by romance. Beckett will provide a sufficient replacement for Leo's underwater skills, and he has already proven himself to be an invaluable resource." Romance. And here I actually thought Leo and I were doing a decent job of keeping our relationship under wraps. Once again, I was wrong. I miscalculated everything, and now I'm the reason Leo lost his spot. Dr. Takumi saunters off, leaving me reeling from his words. I see him signal someone, jerking his neck in my direction, and then Lark appears. She wraps her arm around my shoulder, steering me inside as I search the crowd for Leo. "He's already upstairs," Lark says, following my gaze. As soon as we're through the doors, I feel a crack in my chest, a sob breaking loose. Lark folds her arms around me, letting down her tough exterior as my tears fall. "You're gonna be a hero, Naomi. You just might save us all," she says gently. "If we live to see future generations of humans, it'll be thanks to you. You and Beckett, Gian and Sydney, Dev and Minka. I promise you're making the most worthy sacrifice. I would do it myself if I could." I nod, but there is no dulling the ache in my heart as the faces of the four people I love most in the world flash in my mind. Sam, Mom, Dad, Leo. It's hours before I get to see Leo again. While the eliminated finalists pack and prepare for tomorrow's journey home in a haze of shock, the final six are ushered into a series of all-day briefings with the heads of the space agencies and the Secretary General of the United Nations. The others around me, even the previously hesitant Sydney, are brimming with excitement as we're given the rundown of tomorrow's rocket launch, an event expected to blow the Apollo moon landings out of the water. But my mind is miles away. When we're finally escorted back to our dorm rooms, long after dinner has come and gone, I find Lark on the staircase. "Can you get a message to Leo for me?" I whisper, pleading to her with my eyes. She nods, and I hand her the note I scrawled during one of the long briefing meetings. And then I hurry to my dorm room to wait. Minutes later, he is at my door. Relief mixes with misery as I fly into his arms, wondering how I will ever live without this. I'm sorry, so sorry, I sob as he holds me close, kissing me through my tears. If I hadn't... Don't apologize, he whispers into my hair, and as I look up at him, I see tears in his eyes too. Stay with me tonight, I lace my fingers in his. All night. Lark will cover for us if anyone suspects you're not in your room, but even if she doesn't, I don't care. Dr. Takumi can't punish us any more than he already has. Leo nods and lifts me into his arms. He lays me down on the bed, his lips moving over mine until I forget where we are, forget the goodbye tomorrow will bring. And then, suddenly, he pulls away. What is it? I ask, taken aback. On Europa, they'll expect you to eventually have a partner and procreate, Leo says, his voice catching on the words. I don't know how to face it. I won't, I promise. I don't care what they expect. I won't do it. But I wouldn't blame you if you end up with someone on Earth. Leo shakes his head no, and I press my finger to his lips. That's why I need you to be my first. I need you, this, to hold on to for the rest of my life. Are you sure? Leo whispers. More sure than I've ever been about anything. He lowers toward me, nestling his forehead against mine. Ti amo. Naomi. My heart swells at his words. It's the moment I've dreamed of, but I never expected it to happen the night before we are forced to separate forever. Ti amo. I tighten my arms around him, closing my eyes as I memorize the feel of his touch. I love you too.
27. Leo. I wake up with her skin against mine. Her hair tickling my neck. It's like a dream I didn't dare hope for, and I smile at the sight of her sleeping face pressed against my shoulder. And then I hear the rapping at the door. 1 hour till departure, someone shouts as yesterday's heartbreak comes slamming back to the fore. I feel the blow in my chest, in my stomach, and I sit up, head in my hands. Naomi stirs as I move, and I reach for her hand. It's time, I say as she wakes, my voice coming out thick, unlike my own. She sits up in panic. I can't say goodbye to you. I can't. I take a deep breath, realizing I need to be strong for her. I'll have plenty of time later, the rest of my life, to give in to my emotions. But not now. Not in front of her. You don't have to say goodbye, I say, tracing her collarbone with my finger. I'll send you video messages and emails every day, and maybe when Europa is ready for more settlers from Earth, I can be one of them. It'll be a long time to wait, but I'll wait for you. Naomi doesn't answer, and I know why. I know what she's thinking. What if they don't even make it to Europa? What if the extraterrestrial life is intelligent enough to slaughter them as soon as they arrive? What if while she's on the months-long journey through space, another natural disaster happens on Earth, and this time I don't make it? I know what she's thinking, because these are the same questions playing on a never-ending loop in my own mind. The six of us also ran, tail the final six in a motorcade to the Ellington Field, where we'll be flown home immediately following their departure to the Europa launch site. Whatever hopes I had about staying in America have been swiftly nipped in the bud. As Dr. Takumi informed me yesterday, my time in the United States has come to a close. I have no choice but to go from one setting of heartbreak to another. As our tram approaches the airfield, the crowds return in full force, waving flags and hoisting up signs bearing the names of the final six. It hurts to remember the last time I witnessed this patriotism and celebration, when I was still a part of it. Our tram stops in front of the runway, where Air Force One waits to escort the final six. A searing fury runs through me at the thought of Beckett smirking alongside his uncle as he takes my place.
It should be me on the jet. It should be me in the rocket launch beside Naomi. How could Dr. Takumi make such a huge mistake?
The security guards lead us to a roped-off section of the runway, away from the clamoring crowds, but not nearly close enough to the final six.
To Naomi.
I watch from afar as she stands with her new crewmates, Sib and the new backup robot, the eight of them lined up alongside Dr. Takumi, General Sokolov, and President Wolf. All of them smile proudly, posing for what's sure to be the most legendary photo in human history.
All but Naomi.
I watch as she searches the crowd, her expression panicked. I raise my hand in a forlorn wave, letting her know I'm here. And suddenly, she darts away from the others. I hold my breath as she pushes her way toward me, ignoring the shocked murmurs of the crowd. And then she's in my arms, her lips on mine, her tears against my cheeks.
I love you so much, I whisper.
Two guards break in, pulling her away from me, but not before I slip my Danieli signet ring off my finger and slide it onto hers. She looks from me to the ring, her voice breaking as she says,
I love you too.
I am forced to watch as she climbs into the jet behind the others, leaving me forever. She presses her face to the window, gazing down at me. I blow her a final kiss, and as the plane soars up into the sky, I double over in pain. Ana Martinez approaches me, patting my shoulder awkwardly.
I know this sucks, but it'll be okay. You'll feel better once you're home.
She looks up.
Our rides will be here any minute.
I know Ana is trying to be nice, but her words only make me feel worse. I don't have anyone or anything to go home to. Only ghosts.
To the eliminated six, we thank you for your service.
Dr. Takumi's voice booms from the microphone.
You've been a pride to your countries, and you will be welcomed home with open arms.
I glance around for Lark. Before I go,
I want to say goodbye to the only other person here who really knew Naomi, who knew us.
But I don't see her anywhere. She's not with the rest of the faculty, so where is she? But before I can ask anyone, the engine of the first return jet roars. We watch as it swoops down from the sky, bearing the French flag, and Henry gives the five of us a friendly salute.
Au revoir, mes amis,
he calls before stepping into his homebound jet. I brace myself, knowing my plane from Italy is likely to follow France. Sure enough, when the next jet circles, I can spot the green, white, and red of the Italian flag from high in the sky. The plane skids to a stop on the runway, and the security guard pushes me forward. I turn around for one last look at Johnson Space Center, the place that changed my life, that brought me painfully close to my dreams. And then I force myself to move forward. I sense something is wrong as soon as I step into the plane. This isn't the same basic military jet I flew in on. It only looks identical from the outside. This one is surprisingly spacious inside, filled with plush furniture and an array of computer screens, consoles, and blinking sensors. What's more, no one is here to greet me, not Dr. Schroeder or anyone else from ESA, not even a flight attendant. My eyes catch on one of the computer screens. I blink and lean in for a second look to make sure my eyes aren't deceiving me. But there it is on the screen. The Space Conspirator homepage.
The same website whose theories Naomi talks so much about.
And right there, in the top corner, is the telltale text. Logged in. Administrator.
What the hell? How did I end up on this plane?
Hello? I call out, stumbling as the jet lifts off.
What is this? What's going on?
Thank you, Lark. I hear an unfamiliar female voice say. He's here.
and then a silver-haired woman steps out of the cockpit, the same woman from the photo on Naomi's desk.
Greta Wagner?
I whisper. She hangs up the phone and flashes me a smile. Hello, Leonardo. Have a seat. We have much to discuss.
28. Naomi. My crewmates are wild with excitement as Air Force One descends toward the Gulf of Mexico, where we will launch from sea to space. They whoop and cheer, they pose for selfies with the president, and ask the Europa mission flight director traveling with us a million and one questions, but not me. I spend the first half of the flight with my eyes closed, my head bent against my knees, trying to block out the noise and pretend none of this is happening. But now I look up, staring at Beckett Wolf in hushed conversation with his uncle as my thoughts swirl together. I watch as President Wolf murmurs something in Beckett's ear, and Beckett nods, a strange expression crossing his face. And then the president rises to his feet, moving toward his private cabin at the front of the plane, while Beckett crosses the aisle back to his seat opposite me. He catches me staring. "What are you looking at?" he scoffs. "You told Dr. Takumi what you saw that night, didn't you?" I say slowly as the pieces fall into place. You told him a lot of things. That's what he meant when he said you proved yourself invaluable. You took Leo's spot by being a spy. Beckett laughs, but it's a false, hollow sound. And as I meet his gaze, I know my hunch is right. You'll pay for it. His eyes narrow into slits. Oh, really? Are you actually dumb enough to threaten me right here on my uncle's plane? Sorry to disappoint, but I'm not afraid of your uncle, I retort. He leans forward, his hot breath on my cheek. You should be. Dr. Takumi put me in charge. What? I can't have heard that right. It's true, he told me and my family today. Beckett wraps his hands behind his head, a smug look on his face, and then his smile distorts into a sneer. So don't even think about threatening me again. As soon as we reach space, you'll be answering to me. For once in my life, I am without a comeback. Air Force One touches down to a massive crowd at South Texas Spaceport, a swarm of bodies large enough to swallow the throng we just left in Houston. I can see the Space Inc. Jupiter rocket waiting on the launch pad above the Gulf of Mexico, its thousands of tons gleaming in the sunlight while its vapor rises in preparation for liftoff. As I stare at the rocket, it seems impossible that we'll soon be strapped inside. This is insane. Moments after the wheels hit the ground, we are ushered from Air Force One into the astronaut crew quarters, a hangar near the runway, where a flurry of NASA officials help us into our blue spacesuits built for liftoff and landing. But I'm barely conscious of the action around me, my legs aching to run to where I know my family waits. Finally, once we're suited up, the flight director and security guards escort us to the VIP area, reserved for President Wolf and the final six families. I whip my head around wildly, searching for them, until I hear, "Naomi!" Sam's voice shouts above the din. I break into a sprint, tears blurring my vision as I run toward my family. I don't care that two guards are right behind me, that the whole world is watching our reunion turned goodbye. All I see are my brother, my parents. They hold out their arms to me and I fly straight into them, the four of us colliding in a tangle of hugs, kisses, and tears. "I'm sorry," I cry onto Sam's shoulder. "I was supposed to come back for you. It was supposed to be us against the world, for life, and now..." Sam interrupts, holding me by the shoulders. "It is us against the world, sis. You're going out to find us a better one." His voice cracks with emotion, but he forces a smile. "I told you before, you were born for this. And I'll be okay." "We are so proud of you, Azizem." Dad wraps me in a tight hug, and tears spill from his eyes as he touches my spacesuit. "We'll talk every day, okay? Email, video chatting, whatever you can do, we'll be there." Only my mother is silent, staring at me with a broken look on her face. She tries to smile, but a sob escapes instead. "I love you, my sweet girl," she whispers, kissing my forehead. "I love you all so much. And I realize now, more than ever, how lucky I was, am, to have you." I take a deep breath. I'll never forget it. A roar bursts from the crowd, and I turn to see a giant countdown clock lighting up. "T-minus 10 minutes, a voice booms. I cling tighter to my family as I wonder how it's possible for my heart to break so many times in a single day. One of the guards steps forward, placing a firm hand on my back. It's time to get into the launch vehicle, Naomi. This is it. I shake my head. How is it possible I'm already out of time? I hug my parents and Sam once more, and before our last goodbye, I blurt out, "The other finalist, the one I was standing next to on TV, his name is Leo Danielli, and he doesn't have any family left. Will you find him for me? Maybe you guys can be there for each other. He means the world to me." "We'll find him," Mom says. "Promise." I try to smile and thanks. "Go fly, sis," Sam says in my ear. "We'll be watching you, cheering you on every day from Earth." My body might be up there, but my heart will always be here. I reach out my hand and my parents and brother cover it with their own. So I won't say goodbye. I have to believe I'll see you again. T-7! The booming voice echoes, and now two guards are wrenching me away from my family, ushering me in line with the two robots and the rest of the six. I can hear my heart's loud thumping inside my spacesuit as we make the slow march into the rocket ship. Sib supervises us as we strap into our acceleration seats and lie down flat, just like in the virtual reality simulation. I turn my face against the leather seat as I did with Leo before we kissed, but it's not his face beside me anymore. A fist tightens around my heart. The countdown echoes inside our spacecraft, and it doesn't matter how terrified I am, the clock keeps ticking. T-6, T-5. The ground beneath us rumbles violently, and all six of us grip the sides of our seats in fear. Through the porthole window, I spot fish leaping out of the sea, the sky lighting up a fiery shade. I hear Sib yell, "All clear for liftoff!" The force of gravity presses down against me as the cabin rattles, the engines ignite. Just when I think I can't stand this feeling any longer, that my whole body is going to explode and disintegrate right here, we break loose. The air whooshes from my lungs as we fly. And we soar up past the sky.
29. Leo. I stand at the edge of a private lake in Austria with Dr. Greta Wagner, the exiled inventor and scientist, who I now know as the anonymous mind behind the Space Conspirator 2. Across from us, on a concrete platform, stands her latest secret invention, a single-passenger rocket ship built for Europa. I've long believed that both mankind's greatest discoveries and greatest risks lie there below the ice, Dr. Wagner says, following my gaze. None of us know how Europa's native environment and extraterrestrials will react to the arrival of humans. I wanted to be the one to take that risk, but as you can see, I'm far too old now. When I saw your face on the news the day the final six were announced, I knew I could count on you to be my proxy. I can tell you want this. Maybe as much as I do. My heartbeat picks up speed. Tell me what to do. My spacecraft is smaller, lighter, and therefore faster than the final sixes. Even though they have a head start, as long as you depart this week, you can catch up to them by the time they reach Mars's orbit. Using the airlocks, you will dock with their ship. Dr. Wagner smiles. And hitch a ride with them to Europa. Is it safe? I ask. Not for me, I mean. For the final six. The only risks involved are on your end and mine, she answers. The spacecraft is built for a one-way trip. If the docking fails, you will be adrift in space until you die. If all goes well, I will be in hiding for the rest of my life, since launching a human into space without government approval is a high crime. But it's worth every risk and sacrifice if you make it. Based on my intel, I can say this with certainty. The final six are far more likely to survive Europa with the help that you and I can uniquely provide. I take a deep breath. I have so many questions, but one thought supersedes all others. I'm in. And then I look up and whisper,
I'm on my way, Naomi.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Final Six by Alexandra Monier. Performed by Alexandra Monier and James Foley. This program was recorded at the Media Staff in Los Angeles, California, and at John Marshall Media in New York City. It was produced by John Marshall Media. Executive Producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Alexandra Monier. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.